This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In 1992, AIDS activist Bob Rafsky approached Bill Clinton with a harsh message. We're not dying of AIDS as much as we are dying of 11 years of government neglect. Then candidate Clinton replied, I feel your pain. He went on to win the presidency that year in no small part because he knew how to connect with ordinary Americans, at least according to Republican media wizard Frank Luntz. Luntz helped the GOP craft messages from the contract with America to the death tax. He argues that the principles that make some politicians winners also apply to business. Lexus, for example, the best-selling luxury car in America after just two decades on the market. Luntz writes, you can get a Lexus or a BMW or a Mercedes-Benz for about the same price, but while the BMW ultimate driving machine marketing folks are busy talking about joy and pleasure, the Mercedes ads talk about, well, nothing consistently. Lexus reminds you of their pursuit of perfection every single chance they get. What message, campaign, or commercial clicks with you or doesn't? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, as more mothers give up custody of their kids, they face harsher judgments for that. But first, Frank Luntz joins us here in Studio 3A. His new book is Win, The Key Principles to Take Your Business from Ordinary to Extraordinary. And it's nice to have you with us today.
Who would have thought that Charlie Sheen would have delivered probably the best endorsement of the book when he talked about winning?
I think he may have had something else in mind, but you never know with Charlie Sheen. Meanwhile, in that Lexus slogan, you argue there's a couple of key words in there.
Well, first off, relentless. That means that you are going to come at it again and again. Nothing's going to stop you or deter you or cause you to give up. Pursuit, because nobody actually expects it to happen. They want you to be continuous in your efforts. And perfection, because there's just nothing better. Win is about the specific use of specific words to connect you to your employer or employees,
and
politicians to voters, and frankly, to help people win debates, have discussions, and improve the level of communication.
Why are words important?
People listen very carefully. We were talking before we came on the air that for me, writing a book is the most difficult, anxiety-prone aspect of my life, because the words that I put on paper are very serious to me. When I wrote Win, it only took about 8 months, but it was 8 months of sheer pain and suffering, because every phrase that's in there, and there are about 130 specific linguistic recommendations, I had to test every one to make sure that it worked. There are about 50 or 60 recommendations for how to communicate, not just the words themselves. All of them had to be tested. And in this short amount of time, it's just very time-consuming and very stressful to ensure that you get it right.
Just to illustrate your point, there's a moment in the book where you're talking about uses of words, and then you put a footnote on saying, do not use words like incremental and radical. They're meant to describe the process of paradigm breaking, but they should not become part of your lexicon.
Because that's process, and nobody wants to hear about process. They want to hear about results. They want to be inspired. They want to aspire to something. And so often in our communication, we'll explain how, but not why. The public wants to know why or why not. They don't want to know how you're going to do it.
Does the relentless pursuit of perfection, as good a phrase as that is, does that matter a whit if the car is a piece of junk?
It absolutely matters. And it's something that people who read my materials have asked me in the past. If you don't have principles, the last chapter of the book is all about winning with principles. It's all about applying words to good things, good people, good efforts. Without that inherent accuracy, then even the best words will still fail. But you can have the best product, the best service, the best argument in a debate. But without the effective words, you still lose. In the end, you need good principles and good language if you are to succeed. And this book is based on the interviews with 36 Fortune 400, or Forbes 400, the richest people, and a couple dozen of the top CEOs. I wanted to know what language they used to be successful, and I wanted to know the attributes that could then be applied to the average individual.
It's interesting. Does the same thing apply, the principle, when you're talking about a politician with maybe a great slogan, as well as a company?
It applies even more to politicians, because they are living, breathing embodiments of the language that they use. And it's why how you start the conversation and how you end it matters so much. When you're selling a product or service, you don't have, it doesn't have to be absolutely perfect, although I've provided language that is.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a politician, one wrong word changes the entire, changes the meaning of something.
Give me a for instance.
The most powerful call to action of anything that we've ever tested, let's get to work. Now, I didn't create that phrase. It came from Rick Scott, the current governor of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
He used let's get to work to say, all these politicians talk, it's time to do. Everybody else talks about the problem, it's time to find the solution. And he says it, the visual of him as he says, let's get to work, is him moving down an alleyway, putting his jacket on and looking like this guy's going to kick some butt.
So the visual is important too.
The visual is important. Let's get to work says, let's get it done. And that's what they want. Now, the perfect opening is the word imagine. Because imagine allows you to communicate in the eyes and the vision of the listener rather than yours. And the best illustration of that is 1984. Room 101 in 1984, everyone's read it, and we all have our own imagination of what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
When we saw the movie and we saw what they said Room 101 was, it didn't work for anybody because it's not how we imagine it. To imagine life at perfection, to imagine the American dream, allows the listener to define the communication on their own terms. That's what makes it so powerful.
Yeah, that's why the pictures are so much better on the radio.
Oh, you're so good. And by the way, for those who are listening, I absolutely define. I have a face for radio. Unfortunately, I've got a voice for print. So I apologize for the sandpaper you're listening to.
Now, we're talking with Frank Luntz. His new book is Win, The Key Principles to Take Your Business from Ordinary to Extraordinary. We'd like to hear what campaign slogans, what commercials have clicked with you or not. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And we'll start with Paul. And Paul is with us from Haley in Idaho.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
I always wondered phrase about 9 out of 10 dentists prefer. I was wondering what that 10th dentist knew.
Well, my father was a dentist, and I always thought that he was one of the 10. It's an interesting way to personalize and humanize, which is one of the most important aspects of communication. If you just heard 90% of dentists recommend something, it's too statistical. 9 out of 10 says, well, it's just virtually everyone. It leads you to think of that joke about the one dentist. But so much of communication...
Or what's wrong with the last drop?
Good to the last drop. But the last drop may not be so good.
Terrible.
The best advertising and the best communication when it comes to business is that which makes you smile, that which makes you think, that which makes you ponder. And 9 out of 10 dentists, it causes you to stop and think of what that the significance of it. And that's why it's so effective. By the way, the loudest sound is what I just did.
Silence.
Right.
Silence.
Right. I always wondered, you know, what did that 10th dentist know?
Could you?
And, you can go on and on with that, but, you know, was he a rebellious one? Or it just keeps making you think, you know?
Well, Paul, you make me think that, you know, and Frank Luntz, you'd know about this better than I would. Could you foresee an ad that might work to saying, hey, wait a minute, I'm that 10th dentist, and what they're not telling you is.
That's brilliant. I don't give compliments that easy. That's really brilliant.
And, you know, my girlfriend, and she brushes her teeth all the time, and I think she knows.
Well, all I'd say is, what are you doing at NPR? You can be making a lot of money out in the commercial world.
All right. Well, we'll be back with more after this. No, I'm just kidding. Paul, thanks very much for your call. Here's an email from Holly in Decorah, Iowa. I'd like to know what your guest thinks about the new Miracle Whip ad, which poses the question, which side are you on? It reminds me of the Coke v. Pepsi wars of the 1980s that really spurred sales of both. I think it's genius.
Actually, in this case, I don't. Because there are certain aspects, and there are 15 attributes of winners and winning slogans. Which side are you on sounds divisive, that you're on one side or the other, at a time when we actually want universality. We want unanimity. We are so divided, and we recognize that we're divided, that we're looking for ways to come together. So which side are you on is almost forcing you, almost forcing a polarization. But I will give them this. The second most important attribute of winners after understanding the human dimension is knowing what questions to ask. the rhetorical nature. Which side are you on? Asks a question. That's one of the most powerful, persuasive ways to make a case, to say something, to advertise something, or to communicate it. Don't make a statement. Ask a question.
And let's go next to James. James with us from Richmond.
Yes. I just wanted to talk about the advertising. The Lexus really surpassed all the other luxury lines in the early 90s was the wine glass back on the hood of the Lexus. And it was the wine glasses would not falter or break the Lexus smooth driving. And I thought that was really still the pursuit of perfection line before even the line was.
I thought they should have brought Ella Fitzgerald in at the end to break them. But anyway, that's another ad for a long time
and
ago.
And I think she was dead by that point.
Was waiting for that, but it didn't happen. I guess that's where perfection was made.
She was still on Memorex. Anyway.
Yes, if you had brought Ella Fitzgerald in at that point, then it would have looked really ugly and smelled really badly.
In Principles of Advertising, that was the main thing you talked about. That's really when they took the lead. That commercial really crushed infinity for the next decade to follow.
The visual, and part of when gets into the visuals, the most powerful visual in America today is actually the Statue of Liberty. And yet, where was the Statue of Liberty made?
France.
And yet we think of her as being totally American. And it's not just the Statue of Liberty, but it's at daybreak when you see the sun coming up and she's in silhouette. It's the most incredible visual because it shows hope and opportunity and a new beginning, a new dawn. Having those wine glasses on the car was powerful because it allowed you to visualize quality. I know that this book is 85%, 90% about language and about the attributes, but there are significant segments in there about visuals because we forget that a picture is worth 10,000 words. And that's why I went and tried to capture some of the most powerful visuals, both in politics and in business.
James, thanks very much for the call. We're talking with Frank Luntz. His new book is called Win: The Key Principles to Take Your Business from Ordinary to Extraordinary. More after we come back after a short break. What commercials or political slogans have clicked with you or not? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Listen up, writes Frank Luntz. You only get one shot to make a good first impression, and what you say first colors everything that follows. It will either cast a shadow over your purpose or provide a foundation under it. To him, then, winning's all about language. You can read more about how words can work or fail for politicians pushing agendas in an excerpt from Luntz's book, Win, at our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Tell us what message, campaign, or commercial clicked with you or not. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation by going to our website. That's at npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. Let's go to Stan. Stan with us from Douglas in Wyoming.
Yes, good afternoon. Pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
You know, if we are going to point to anything that Mr. Luntz has been successful with, and I think he's probably been very successful, it is the verbiage used by the right in this country, the Republican right in this country. While it's my personal opinion that their policies and their politics are somewhat bankrupt, their success in using words has been phenomenal. And I'll give you one very prime example. The name of their opponent party is the Democratic Party, but Republican after Republican after Republican refers to them as the Democrat Party, which has a harsh ring and a ring which reminds us of vermin. And it's just the simple use of the Democrat Party, which casts a light, even though it may be unspoken.
I've heard that expressed. I've read it in the blogs, and I do read as people comment on some of the things that I do. I got to tell you, it is absolutely it has no relevance. It doesn't. People wanted to suggest that when you say Democrat, you thought of the word rat at the end. It's just not real. Nobody thinks that way. Even when you look at the word, it doesn't.
Sir, you're denying the power of your own position. It's the verbiage and the effect of
it does. Stan is right. It does rile Democrats.
It riles Democrats, but there's so much more for them to be riled at than that one. The one that should bother them was the one that I had the conversation on NPR the last time I was on, which is the death tax versus the estate tax, or drilling for oil versus exploring for energy.
Powerful verbiage, and I am actually calling to compliment you because your work with the right wing, while they have, again, in my opinion, less to work with than we might like, the power of their verbiage in politics far surpasses what the Democratic Party and the left wing has managed to produce.
Now think about what he just said. He asked a very legitimate question. He challenged me.
Mm-hmm.
He did so in a respectful way. He showed evidence of it. And even when I gave him pushback, he stuck to his point of view. But he acknowledged. He did the what I consider to be the third most powerful word, I get it. He was communicating that he gets the impact of language. If that was the tone of political discourse, we would not be so divided in this country. And by the way, for that caller, I'm going to do you a favor right now. I hope you all got pens. But I'm going to run through very quickly words that either side can use to make a difference in 2011. Uncompromising integrity, because uncompromising means that there is no fluctuation. You're not changing depending on who you're talking to or where you are. And integrity, because that's actually more powerful than either honesty or truth. You combine those two words into uncompromising integrity. If that's what you represent, then you're successful. The simple truth, that phrase, the simple truth.
And Mr. Lunt, the thing I would compliment you with is that I think you get it.
Oh, thank you. But I'm now trying
to get it.
I'm giving you guys something that you can use if you don't want to buy win.
And Stan, we'll let you let you get off the line. And despite your ability to get it and communicate clearly and respectfully, you're still not going to win in Wyoming as a Democrat. But anyway, go ahead.
Frank actually, Lance. No. The governor of Wyoming for the last four,
That's
last
true.
Eight
That's
years
true.
was a Democrat. Believe the simple truth, which takes something that's very complicated, such as the budget. And it clarifies that when you say the simple truth is this, and then you pause, and then you finish the sentence, people stop and they think specifically about what you're saying. And it's, in essence, trying to boil it down to something that's very understandable and meaningful.
The following phrase better be simple, though. It can't be.
It has to be simple, but you deliver them a principle. The simple truth is, as a matter of principle, we cannot spend more than we take in.
Mm-hmm.
Something that changes the tone of the debate. Or believe in better, which is a corporate phrase rather than a political phrase. We don't want more. We're not looking for quantity. We're looking for quality.
Mm.
Believe in better suggests intergenerational change. It suggests product innovation. It suggests something better for the future. Believe in better is one of the most powerful words you can use in the business community. Now, I've said this because there are people who will be wanting to apply win to their own personal life. If you remember only one thing, and I'm going to do it right here, right now, because I just happened to come to it. That phrase, if you remember only one thing, there are 125 specific language recommendations in win that can make a difference in your day-to-day lives. Now, this entire interview, people will remember that one fact because I prefaced it with, if you remember only one thing. These aren't Republican words or Democratic words. They're American words.
And if you remember only one thing, it's 800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get Stephen on the line. Stephen with us from San Jose.
Hi, good afternoon. This is a near and dear subject to my heart. And actually, yes, we can. Or the use of we as a powerful tool to connect with everybody, each other. We the people, used much earlier. Another favorite. So that's in opposition to I and you or us and them. So like if we remember only one thing instead of if you remember, the power in that.
Well, the ability to connect and communicate is one of the most powerful. And you cannot find anyone who has been truly successful in life that doesn't have that ability because you've got to motivate and you've got to, frankly, you have to influence. And when you connect to them on their level, you are much more likely to be successful with whatever mission or purpose. And one other point, this is also there's a whole listing of the 15 attributes that matter. It's the willingness to try, to fail, and to do it again. The most successful people in American life are those that have had horrific failures and have come back, done it again and again until they got it right. Whether it's Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, these are people. Our presidential candidates have so often lost early on and then come back to be successful.
Stephen, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
You manage, as you quote yourself as saying, to quote you rather, you manage to irritate almost everybody in the space of three pages by saying nice things about Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama.
Go figure.
Yeah. They all, though, were effective communicators.
Bill Clinton was effective because he had that personal relationship, that this was a guy who had a tremendous curiosity, which is another one of the key attributes. And he had the ability, his mind was his mind and his heart were very well connected, and so he genuinely empathized. George W. Bush, who I'm sure that a lot of people when I say this will not be happy about it, but Bush had a determination and had a very clearly defined set of principles. You knew exactly where he stood. Whether or not you liked him, there was no doubt about what position he was going to take, and that's what endeared him to a significant segment of American society. And Barack Obama... Yeah, I tell this joke about Barack Obama's the best communicator of our generation. The guy reads a teleprompter better than any Hollywood actor. John McCain, his opponent. Stevie Wonder reads a teleprompter better than John McCain. Obama has this. You're not laughing. You're not even smiling. Obama, neither is John McCain, I'm sure.
No, I'm sure.
Obama has a grasp of language and the presentation of language, particularly in times of crisis. And he did this over the race issue. He did this early on in his administration when the country was polarized. That was unprecedented.
I think he did it in the Tucson speech, too.
It was brilliant. The Tucson speech was brilliant. And I'm so angry at Republicans for jumping on him, because you have to give credit. Part of being successful is to give credit to people who you may not disagree with when they do well.
And John McCain did to give him credit.
And McCain did, and some other Republicans did. And that we will be far more effective as communicators when we acknowledge our mistakes and then we try to make them up.
You do say, by definition, any person who gets elected president of the United States twice has to be defined as a winner. Richard Nixon?
His career certainly ended in failure, but someone who won an election with 60% of the vote, won 49 out of 50 states, that makes his up to that point incredibly successful. The idea of winning 49 states, incredible. And yet, he will always go down as a failure because of one stupid moral. And that goes back to that last chapter of principles.
Yeah.
If you don't have principles, you cannot be a winner.
Here's an email we have from Lewis in Columbia, South Carolina. It irks me that when I hear a corporation has a passion for something. Corporations have a passion for profits.
No, that's not true. Apple, I'll give you a great example. Apple has a passion to deliver the most amazing, innovative. And in fact, I got criticized because in Win, there are at least 10 references to what Steve Jobs has done and Apple has done. And that my editor said that's too much. But Apple's a passionate company.
Though you do trash him for his reaction to the when the iPhone 4 had problems with reception.
Because he wouldn't admit a mistake. And one of the key components of success is to acknowledge your failures. FedEx is another company that's passionate. When it absolutely, positively has to get there is such a great aspirational phrase. And FedEx used it for almost a decade to communicate the passion of delivering a package. The more passionate you are, the more successful you are.
Here's an email from Sarah. What can Brown do for you, UPS? What was all that about? It was a terrible slogan.
It was an awful slogan. And they're now trying to make a campaign about logistics. With all due respect to UPS, it's a fine company. Nobody cares about logistics. They care about that package arriving at their home, at their office, when it is supposed to, and in the condition it's supposed to. FedEx is a much better communicator than UPS.
And this email we have from Kent in Conifer, Colorado. I'm married to a communications PhD. I'm well aware of framing and wise choices of words. But when someone promotes the phrase death panels or death tax in a completely misleading fashion designed just to raise blood pressure irrespective of the facts, it's propaganda, plain and simple. In Mr. Luntz's own speaking about what process he serves, he manages to obfuscate that as well.
It's the word propaganda is always, when I hear that word, I always get concerned. And I had nothing to do with death panels. I thought it was a horrible phrase about end of life. I didn't think it was accurate, and I've always been opposed to it. The reason why I stood behind that phrase death tax for so many years is because the only time that you could pay that tax, the only time, is on the death of a relative. And that's what makes it a death tax. You have to be accurate. The attributes that are in the book, passion, persuasion, persistence, perfection, prioritization, being people-centered, None of them are as important as principles. Without principles, the language will fail.
We're talking with Frank Luntz about his new book, Win, The Key Principles to Take Your Business from Ordinary to Extraordinary. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News. And let me see if we can go to another caller. This is Patrick. Patrick with us from St. Louis.
Oh, hi. I'm a big fan of the show.
Thank you.
I'm an English instructor at a community college, and this is really fascinating to me because the last assignment I just had my students turn in was a sort of analysis of a print ad. And one of the ones that resonated the most with some of my students were the Old Spice ads that have been coming out recently. There's one of, like, Ray Lewis, and the text is just, "I'm Ray Lewis, and I'm selling you Old Spice." And I was just wondering for the opinion on this kind of postmodern sort of meta-advertising that's starting to take root in a few recent years.
Frank Luntz?
It's an interesting choice of an individual to sell the product. I think it's a very smart choice. I would not have used the phrase, "I'm selling you," because even though that's exactly what you're doing, when you tell people you're doing it, or worse yet, when you tell people, "I'm not here to sell you anything," they automatically assume that that's exactly what you are here to do.
Right.
The ad is very persuasive because, well, actually, what I would have said is, "I'm Ray Lewis, and I don't need to use Old Spice, but I do." That's how I would have done that.
And what do you think of the television ads that are, well, they've been widely praised, the Old Spice ads that with the unbelievably attractive male model doing all kinds of absurd things?
The women love it. The guys find it annoying. It always causes a great conversation, and it makes it more fun. You know, we've been testing those visuals to see what attracts attention. I do a lot of work in travel and tourism, and I think this story's in the book. This woman is in a hammock, and she's got the beach below her and the sky above her and the ocean beyond her. She's relaxing. She's got a drink in her hand and a book. Every woman sees this picture and says, "I want to be in that hammock." Every guy sees the picture and says, "I want to be in that hammock with that woman." It works for everybody. And that's the kind of visual that you're trying to attract, something that in some way or another connects you to what's happening there in a realistic way.
You left something out. She's in that hammock listening to public radio.
The previous commercial was paid for by NPR.
Let's see if we get another caller in. Let's go to this is Matt, and Matt's with us from Brighton in Michigan.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up the point of when companies reference studies in their commercials, and I think it's interesting with the wording. That I'm referring to is most recently the Purina dog chow commercials, and they have a study that they reference that basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, says if, you know, appropriate over the course of a dog's lifetime, it is shown to extend the dog's life up to X number of years. And essentially, you know, my wife works in the veterinary field, and what she has basically told me is that just means don't overfeed your dog. If you feed it appropriately, of course it's going to last longer. And I just think that in general, it's very interesting to hear the wording that companies use when referencing studies. And it's found that, or I have found that it actually turns me off to the product when I hear someone reference their own study, even if it says an independent study.
Very smart, because what the public is asking for, and I quote, "no fine print," unquote. And so anything that causes you to doubt, to raise either objections or just concerns about it. And they always put the information right at the bottom of the screen so you can't really read it. Every time you see a company do that, the ad becomes less effective. The communication becomes less effective.
What about those companies, and thanks, Matt, for the call, that are forced by, you know, regulation to put in, you know, the possible side effects of this? This drug is going to make you feel absolutely fantastic. Of course, it may cause heart failure.
Yes, and what the people now respond, and the goal of those ads is to merely get the name of the medication into the minds of the consumers so that they will ask their doctor about it. That's the whole goal.
And the whole goal of political ads, you say, we're going to see political ads with the same message over and over and over and over again for one reason. Because it works.
Because the words work. But look, if you want to communicate, I wrote Win for people who, on both sides, legitimately on both sides. If you're a Democrat listening to this right now, the whole playbook is in this book. If you're a Republican and you're frustrated because Barack Obama is a great communicator, the playbook is in this book. And if you're a corporation who wants to satisfy their employees, how to do it is in this book. And finally, if you're an employee and you want to get a raise, whether at NPR or any place else, It's in this book.
Frank Luntz with his new book, Undersell. No, no. His new book is called Win, the Key Principles to Take Your Business from Ordinary to Extraordinary. He was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. Coming up after a short break, Leah Goldman asks and answers the question, what kind of mother leaves her kids? Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.